ಕುಂಜಬಿಹಾರಿ ಗೋಪೀಗಣ ವಲ್ಲಭಗಿರಿವರಧಾರಿ
Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru and Gauranga.
Hare Krishna. Sorry. Those devotees like Madhava Prabhu, Akhilananda Prabhu and lot of Matajis that like to send me the text for the question or comment for the speaker, please do this to Radhikesh Prabhu. I won't be here for some few weeks for my classes.
That phone number is 352-221-3708. Thank you. 352-221-3708. Hare.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
So this morning we're reading from Canto 1, Chapter 11, text number 27.
Sita tapatra vyajane upaskrita. Prasuna varsha abhivarshita pathi. Pishanga vasa vanamalaya bhavau. Dhano yathako rupa chapa vedyutai. Sita tapatra vyajane upaskrita. Prasuna varshar abhivarshita pathi. Pishanga vasa vanamalaya bhavau. Dhano yatha korupa chapa vedyutai.
Please chant.
Gano yathako rupa chapa vaidyutai.
Patra, white umbrella, Vyajanai, with a chamara fan, Upaskrita, being served by, Prasuna, flowers, Varshai, by the showers, Abhivarshita, thus being covered, Pathi, on the road, Pishanga Vasaha, by the yellow garments, Vanamalaya, by the flower garment, Babho, thus it became, Ghana, cloud, Yatha, as if, Arka, the sun, Urupa, the moon, Chapa, the rainbow, Vedditai, by the lightning. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. As the Lord passed along the public road of Dwarka, his head was protected from the sunshine by a white umbrella. White feathered fans moved in semicircles and showers of flowers fell upon the road. His yellow garments and garlands of flowers made it appear as if a dark cloud was surrounded simultaneously by sun, moon, lightning, and rainbows. Purport. The sun, moon, rainbow, and lightning do not appear in the sky simultaneously. When there is sun, the moonlight becomes insignificant, and if there are clouds and a rainbow, there is no manifestation of lightning. The Lord's bodily hue is just like a new monsoon cloud. He's compared herein to the cloud. The white umbrella over his head is compared to the sun. The movement of the bunch hair fan of flukes is compared to the moon. The showers of flowers are compared to the stars. His yellow garments are compared to the rainbow. Yes, it says here rainbow. Chapa is rainbow. Chapa is rainbow, yeah? Yeah. Well, lightning, whatever. It's all beautiful.
It's both.
There you are. So all these activities of the firmament being impossible, simultaneous factors, cannot be adjusted by comparison. The adjustment is possible only when we think of the inconceivable potency of the Lord. The Lord is all-powerful. And in his presence, anything impossible can be made possible by his inconceivable energy. But the situation created at the time of his passing on the roads of Dwarka was beautiful and could not be compared to anything besides a description of natural phenomena. So I'll read the English translation of the Mangalacharan. I was born in the darkest ignorance, and my spiritual master opened my eyes with a torch of knowledge. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him. When will Srila Rupa Goswami Prabhupada, who has established within this material world the mission to fulfill the desire of Lord Chaitanya, give me shelter under his lotus feet? I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of my spiritual master and unto the feet of all the Vaishnavas. I offer my respectful obeisances unto the lotus feet of Srila Rupa Goswami, along with his elder brother Sanatan Goswami, as well as Raghunath Das and Raghunath Bhatt, Gopal Bhatt, and Srila Jiva Goswami. I offer my respectful obeisances to Lord Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, along with Advaita Charya, Gadadhar, Srivas, and other associates. I offer my respectful obeisances to Srimati Radharani and Sri Krishna, along with their associates Sri Lalita and Sri Vishakha. O my dear Krishna, you are the friend of the distressed and the source of creation. You are the master of the gopis and the lover of Radharani. I offer my respectful obeisances unto you. I offer my respects to Radharani, whose bodily complexion is like molten gold, and who is the queen of Vrindavan. You are the daughter of King Vrishabhanu, and you are very dear to Lord Krishna. I offer my respectful obeisances unto all the Vaishnava devotees of the Lord. They can fulfill the desires of everyone just like desire trees, and they are full of compassion for the fallen souls. I offer my obeisances to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhar, Srivas, and all others in the line of devotion. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai. So, in this chapter, we are seeing through the eyes of Suta Goswami. So Suta Goswami is narrating this pastime, Krishna's entrance into Dwarka. And how many verses there have been about beauty? So many verses have been, if you remember, you've been attending classes every day, there are quite many verses talking about beauty. And here's another verse that talks about beauty. So we get to know the author here, Suta Goswami. We get to know a little bit about him, because he's writing about many things, but a lot of beauty. I was thinking that we have so many biographies of Srila Prabhupada, so many biographies that are written. You know, we have the Lilamrita, but which is more, not a personal biography, it's more an elaborate biography of Srila Prabhupada, but personal biographies are there recently, you know, Blazing Sadhus and Miracle on Second Avenue, Shamasundar Prabhu's chasing the rhino.
What is the difficulty?
Yeah, so many. And when we read the biographies, each biography, although they're about Prabhupada, we get to know the author also. We get to have some sense of the author. He, just like Suta Goswami, we are getting to know him. And this morning when I woke up, I thought about Shyamasundara Prabhu's biography and how I really appreciated something in his biography that really was touched my heart when I read that. And I was thinking, so I went on my bookshelf to get it, and I was thinking, oh my God, now I'm going to go through the whole book, try to figure out, it's my japa time, and I guess I'll chant my japa and go flip the pages, you know. I wasn't so happy about it, but I really wanted to find it, so I did go and get the book. And when I opened the book, amazingly, the two places that I really loved were bookmarked. so I could chant my japa without flipping through the pages. But believe me, I did that too as well. But I want to read this again with the understanding that how we get to know the author I could sit down and read the whole thing here, but I'm not going to do that. I'll just read a small part that I like. Feel the bliss of love for himself. I don't quite get this, but it sounds all right. I'm thinking, okay, this Chaitanya fellow is a kind of hippie, one of us, with his long hair and yellow robes. I can dig that. And he was a contemporary of Shakespeare, so not that long ago, he's always singing and dancing and going into ecstasy. And then this is the part. I can't take my eyes off the Swami. He is just so beautiful. I mean physically beautiful. He says, quote, another name for Krishna is Bhagawan. Bhagawan means he has all the opulences in full. There are 6 opulences. Krishna is all powerful. He knows everything. He's got all knowledge. He's got all wealth. Because everything belongs to him, he's all famous. Everyone knows him. He's all beautiful. He's all renowned. That means he's all attractive. Krishna means all attractive, unquote. I get it. Because Bhaktivedanta Swami is the most attractive person I have ever seen. And this guy only works for Krishna. Just love how he writes. It's so endearing to the heart, you know. He's the messenger, so how beautiful Krishna must be. The Swami's physical beauty seems ever fresh and energetic, fueled by transcendental energy, like the fluid grace you see in youth. The Swami's eyes, his large mouth, his facial expressions all play together with everything he says. He would break mid-sentence a dramatic pause. Huh? I can't do it, but you know what Prabhupada did. Like returning, then his description, like returning to the tambura drone in an Indian raga. He seems to know everything, and I can't take my ears away. Wow.
What year did he write that?
I don't know. We got this book when Shyama Darshini was like not the last Sadhu Sangha, but the Sadhu Sangha before that. Anyway, a few years ago.
Is it one or two past time? The past time is one was it?
Oh, you're talking about the past time or?
Yeah, when did he
put the book out?
No, I'm asking you when, at what point in his time the problem.
Oh, this is just initial. This is the very beginning.
Early days of sentence.
Yeah, very beginning. Very beginning. Okay, then I have to read one more. The two favorite of mine. And this is Malati Devi. By the way, side note. She doesn't like to be called Mother Malati, and she doesn't like to be called Malati Prabhu either. She likes to be called Malati or Malati Devi. So this whole movement about Prabhu and this and that. No, she actually likes to be called Malati or Malati Devi. So I think that's very sweet, Malati Devi. So this is Malati Devi writing. Another really sweet. I remember just staring at his earlobe, his nostrils. You would take one small part, his fingertips, as he played the kartals, his eyelids, the back of his head, and you would stare at that one portion of his body. And it was like it wasn't real, but it was more than real. He was so beautiful. The hippie motto was, never trust anyone over 30. And here was the Swami at 70. And we never thought him as an old man. He would say it sometimes, I'm an old man, but we didn't think of him like that at all. And then this is Shamsunda writing. And the kirtans, that was what really convinced us. Those early kirtans would go on, starting slow, back and forth, building. If you search to the noise, you heard absolute silence, hearts beating in rhythm, high vibration, zinging to a tremendous crescendo a half hour later. All of us were blasted out of our minds. Afterwards, Swamiji would intone a low Vedic prayer like peace itself and say, "Thank you very much." Wow. Jai Shri Prabhupada. So yeah, this is Shamsunda writing, Malti Devi expressing, and you just like, who do you fall in love with? Srila Prabhupada or the writer? Both. You get to know everybody. And this is what we see here, Suta Goswami, in this chapter. He's just fascinated with different kinds of beauties. Now the first beauty he describes after the first verse in this chapter, he presents Krishna on the chariot and blowing his conch shell. So he's like reading that verse, it's like Krishna is so happy that he's happy that he's in Dwarka and he's blowing his conch shell. Here I am, I'm here. So he's all very happy. He knows that everybody else is going to be very happy. But the second verse, he focuses on his conch shell, his fat, bold conch shell, white conch shell. And he says that how it's gripped by Krishna's lotus hands and his lips are touching the conch shell and it's glowing, the shade of his lips are on the conch shell, so to speak, reflects there. And he describes that it was a white swan was playing in the stems of red lotus flowers. Again, a sweet description of beauty. The verse is about beauty here, so I'm concentrating on his verses that he speaks about the beauty. It's interesting, if you really think about it, here Suta Goswami is looking at, and I'm assuming these are sphurthis that he's getting or maybe he has heard, but whatever it may be, he is concentrating, he's focusing, he's first seeing Krishna, but then he zooms in and focuses on his conch shell, his hands. And I remember seeing one, there's so many nice footage of Srila Prabhupada. But this made me think about one footage that I saw of Srila Prabhupada, and I don't know who took it and when it was. I think it was San Francisco, Rath Yatra, but I could be wrong. And maybe those who are expert in here may remember that. But this devotee takes a footage of Srila Prabhupada. He's dancing with his arms up, and then he goes down at Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet. And it's interesting, you don't see Srila Prabhupada's lotus feet at all. You don't even see his toenail, nothing. It's kind of made me think about, you know, see Premanjali, when she wears her saris, you know, they're all the way down, like on the floor, touching the floor, and you don't see anything. I mean, I never knew that. When I saw that, I'm thinking, wow, I never remember Srila Prabhupada wearing his sannyas dhoti so low that nothing was showing. But not only that, when he was dancing, the folds of his cloth, of his sannyas dhoti, there were folds in there. So he was going up and down, so you could see these folds going up and down. Like, you know, you have the, what you call the...
Band.
The what?
The accordion.
Accordion, that's right, the accordion. And it goes like that. It was going up and down and it looks so beautiful. And you can see the devotee who was taking the video, the footage, was just like, you know, it was, I think, at least 7 or 8 seconds there with the saffron cloth going up like, you know, going like this. And I was thinking, yeah, he just got like, you know, mesmerized with Prabhupada's dhoti going like that, and you don't see any of Prabhupada's lotus feet. And we see that that this devotee was like that, and here Suta Goswami is just amazed to see the beauty of the fat gold and the Lord gripping his by his hand like that. And then later on we see that Suta Goswami, then he focuses on the citizens and what they have to say. So we have quite many verses of him focusing on that, hearing how the citizens were praising Krishna. And after that, he again, Suta Goswami, focuses on four verses on the beauty of Dwarka. Four verses he gives. And he gives a lot of details, and all of you have been hearing that. And there's, we can always hear it, and because we always forget, at least I do forget, besides I think Pran Govinda, everybody tends to forget about different things. And so there's so many descriptions, sweet descriptions about the flower gardens and parks and, you know, festooned arches along the roads and plantain trees and mango leaves and, you know, so many things, every door, how they were decorated by auspicious things like curd and unbroken fruits and sugar cane and full of water pots. So there's four verses that he describes the beauty of how Dwarka Dham was. And then a few verses as described about reactions of the residents, of all the residents, how they got up and approached Lord Krishna. And then there's only one verse. Yesterday, Akuti Prabhu was describing that. One verse about Lord Krishna's personal beauty. And that's interesting that the next verse, tomorrow, is about Lord Krishna entering the palace. He enters the palace. So he zooms on Krishna's beauty after he describes that he's been walking on the road. So from his chariot, he got down, citizens came, and then we see that Krishna was on the public roads walking and then greeting everybody. So you can imagine the camera going in his furti, he's seeing everything like this, and then he zooms in on Krishna's personal beauty, which we heard yesterday. The Lord's chest is the abode of goddess of fortune. His moon-like face is drinking vessel for the eyes which hanker after all that is beautiful. His arms are resting places for the administrative demigods, and his lotus feet are the refuge of pure devotees who never talk or sing of any subject except his lordship. So you would think that after he has done that, after he has glorified Krishna, seeing him very close, you will see him, you see that he's going into the palace. But no, he actually zooms out. And I found that very interesting. Something, again, say something about Suta Goswami. And here he's, it's almost like he's gone in ecstasy. He's so amazed and the word is not bewildered, but I don't know what word to use, but he's so amazed with the beauty of Krishna there with his bluish form and the white umbrella on top of his, shading him, and the chamaras going like this, and somebody throwing flowers on the road. He's really taken back with that beauty that he has no other way to describe than saying that it's actually, he cannot describe. It's so indescribable, and the way he describes it is as if the sun, the moon, the lightning, rainbows, dark cloud, everything all together. So that's not possible. Prabhupada is saying this is inconceivable. It's not possible. So you can see how Suta Goswami is like, he's just so amazed to see the whole beauty of everything. So question is, in this specific verse and otherwise, is Suta Goswami praising the Lord directly? Because he is saying, the bluish dark cloud. He seemed like a dark cloud. So his bluish complexion with his yellow garments, is that what he is glorifying? Is he glorifying Krishna directly? Or is he glorifying the articles, the chamaras, the umbrella? Is that what's beautiful? What is he glorifying here? Why is he so amazed by everything? What is really catching him? Lord Shiva tells Parvati, and it's a very famous verse, Aradhananam sarvesham Vishnur aradhanam param tasmat parataram devi tadiyanam samarchanam. Lord Shiva is telling Parvati that of all the things to be worshipped, the highest object of worship is Lord Vishnu, Lord Krishna. But he says, tasmat, but beyond that, paratram, higher than that is what? Tadiyanam samarchanam. Higher than that is actually worshipping what is in relationship to Lord Krishna. That is the highest. That is higher than that. So we see here in Suta Goswami, I have mentioned all the things he describes, but one very amazing thing, what he describes in all these verses up till 27, it is one verse, and we understand why he is describing, as we understand this verse, Tadiyanam Samarchanam. He's describing the prostitutes of Dwarka. He dedicates one whole verse to the prostitutes of Dwarka, the beauty of the prostitutes of Dwarka. Now, he has described, in other verses, he has described the brahmanas, but then all the verses are shared with other things, like the brahmanas he shares with the elephants coming, and all of them are actually shared. There's something else going on in one verse. But he focuses one whole verse on the prostitutes. He's focused on it. He focuses, and you see how he focuses. Suta Goswami is what? I don't know what his ashram is. Does anybody know what his ashram is?
He's from outcast.
He's from outcast, okay. So he's an outcast. And who is his? I didn't even know Pangolin was sitting there. because I was thinking, oh, Pangolin probably is not here. He's going to answer my question. Okay. So he's an outcast. That's right. He's a Suta. And he is talking to the sages of Naimisharanya.
The highest form of Brahman.
Highest form of Brahman. Okay, there you are. And so he is, look at the congregation we have, so to speak, in this discussion. And who does Suta focuses his mind on? The prostitutes of Dwarka. It's interesting, he says, many hundreds of well-known prostitutes. First of all, I'm thinking, how does he know that they're well-known prostitutes? But maybe they're dressed in a certain way, maybe they're opulence or whatever. And then he said, they began to proceed on various vehicles. So he's seeing these hundreds of prostitutes are coming, Lord Krishna is coming, and hundreds of prostitutes are coming. And they are very eager to meet the Lord. And then hear the description. And their beautiful faces. He's focusing on the prostitutes' beautiful faces. And they were decorated with dazzling earrings. Wow. He's noticing all this. That they had beautiful earrings. I mean, would one of you men here, if we knew a prostitute was coming, who is a devotee of the Lord, would you focus or maybe your wife is going to say, what are you looking at, you know? Why are you looking at that prostitute? But here Suta Goswami is looking, focusing on the prostitute, on their dazzling earrings. But not only that, how these dazzling earrings enhance the beauty of their foreheads. Well, that was a little bewildering for me, how the earrings were enhancing the forehead, but I guess Suta Goswami is seeing the whole face, and you can see actually, you know, Krishna's earrings and how we may think it may beautify his cheeks, but his foreheads as well. So Suta Goswami is seeing that, and he's describing to all these sages sitting in front, why? Why is he doing that? Because he understands tadiyanam samarchanam. He's not seeing the prostitutes as something separate. He's seeing them in relationship to Krishna. In relationship to Krishna, and therefore he's seeing that they are very eager to meet the Lord. He's seeing how anxiously they are coming, and they are running to him. And so he's focusing on them, focusing his eyes and seeing them, how they are looking so beautiful. Srila Prabhupada writes in one of the purports, must be in the fifth canto, I didn't note it down. He says, when the unalloyed devotees and the leaders of the snakes offer their obeisances to Lord Shankarshan with great devotion, they become very joyful upon seeing their own beautiful faces reflected in his toenails. And isn't that beautiful? They become very joyful upon seeing their own beautiful faces reflected in his toenails. Their cheeks are decorated with glittering earrings, and the beauty of their faces is extremely pleasing to see. So yes, the beauty of Krishna reflects upon his devotees. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes recall that his disciples, when he met them, they were dirty, morose hippies. He said, but then when they took to Krishna consciousness, they became like bright-faced angels from Vaikuntha. This is what happens when we become tadiya, when we become Krishna's tadiya, when we become related to him. But the interesting part is not, and that's what I find this verse is in some sense, because the question is whether, is it Krishna being beautiful here described, or is it the things around him? Or the services that the devotees are offering by offering flowers to him, and the umbrella, holding the umbrella for him. Who is beautiful here? Who is beautifying who? Is it Krishna beautifying everything else, or is everything else beautifying Krishna? And Prabhupada writes in the purport of describing Lord Varaha. When Lord Varaha was lifting the earth, Srila Prabhupada writes in the purport, when a cloud rests on the peak of a great mountain, it appears to be sustained by the mountain. And at the same time, it looks very beautiful. Similarly, the Lord has no need to sustain the earth on his tusk, but when he does so, the world becomes beautiful. Then he says, just as the Lord becomes more beautiful because of his pure devotees on the earth. Wow, isn't that sweet? That's just so sweet that it seems like it's very reciprocal, the beauty of the Lord, the beauty of his devotees, the beauty of things around that is related to tadiyanam. That is related to Krishna becomes beautiful. And so, one thing I remember that Srila Prabhupada writes, as far as this particular pastime, the beauty that is described here in this chapter about all the gardens and courtyards and the parks and the roads and etc., then Srila Prabhupada desired that his Mayapur Dham be constructed like that. He specifically mentioned that just like the description of Dwarka is given in the Krishna book, the same way he would like Mayapur Dham to be in the same way to be constructed. And so yes, everything is beautiful when it's in relationship to Krishna. So it's important that we not only dress our Radhishyam so beautifully, they are so beautifully decorated, dress, but also everything around him is kept beautiful. Madhurya Lila Nanda, she keeps our gardens in front of our temple so beautiful. I know Mahendrani has certain section that she keeps beautiful. She's always meditating on what flowers to put, I think around Tulsi Devi that we have here. And, you know, different devotees, I think Maitreya Prabhu, he has certain part that he keeps, you know, puts his heart and keeps things beautiful. You know, Akuti has her eco farm. Everybody puts their heart in beautifying this place and to keep it beautiful. So we have devotees who are dressing the deity so beautiful, and then we have devotees who are keeping everything around Krishna so beautiful, which makes a big thing. And Krishna beautifies the place and everything, because we can go and see some beautiful place like that outside, beautiful gardens, but it's not as beautiful as when we come to the temple and the gardens are beautiful. Srila Prabhupada really liked everything to be beautiful. He even said something about Potomac, and I don't know, Pran Govinda, if you know this, but I couldn't find it, but I've heard that many times, especially because we were living in Potomac, that Srila Prabhupada said that he wanted the gardens in the Potomac temple to be very beautiful, so beautiful the gardens should be, so that the senator's wives would come there in Potomac and I guess spend time or take a stroll there. Or so he liked things to be very beautiful, again always in relation to Krishna. So anybody has any questions, comments in regards to today's verse? Yes, Jatari Prabhu.
You were saying about how you know, things in relationship with Krishna, it's kind of a back and forth thing. Krishna makes the devotees beautiful and the devotees make Krishna beautiful. So in one of those discussions that Shyamasundara was having with Prabhupada, Shyamasundara brought up one philosopher, I don't remember the one's name, he said that I think it was maybe Augustine or something, said that God created us, the souls, because he was alone and he didn't want to be alone. You know, and Prabhupada said, oh no, that's not true at all. He's always with his associates, you know, and there's so many of them. So it's true, you know, he makes everything beautiful back and forth.
Thank you. Thank you. Any other points or any other questions? Okay, I'll put a question.
One online.
No question,
thank you, Madhumati Prabhu, for being our tour guide for the festival of Lord Krishna's unlimited and gloriously transcendental beauty and his devotees' focus and descriptions of such. Hare Krishna. I don't know who it's from because they didn't tell me.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for whoever.
And Ragatma Mataji says, thank you, Madhumati. You always manage to uncover something many of us would never see.
By your blessings, Ragatmika. I have a question. Okay, so somebody has a question here? No? Nobody has a question. So I have a question. So I know Madhurya Lila Nanda, she grows beautiful flowers here, and for us garland makers, she has separate flowers out there. But the flowers she puts here sometimes, they're not the same flowers she grows on the other side back there. So these flowers are so beautiful, and especially for little deities I make, I like to go and pick those flowers. And she does not like me or anybody picking those flowers from there to make the garlands. And so, is there anything wrong? Is there anything wrong for me to pick some flowers and make Krishna's garland? Or is it important those flowers be out there? Because it's important that Krishna's garden look beautiful so that Krishna appreciates his gardens. Srila Prabhupada appreciates his gardens, temple gardens, to look beautiful. That's very important. I mean, we, as I said, it's very important that everything looks beautiful. But sometimes those flowers are just the right size for making Krishna's garland. And they just add to his garlands. And that will add beauty to Krishna's beauty. And so then when the devotees look at Krishna's beauty with those beautiful garlands, that it increases their own beauty because they are appreciating. So, is it wrong for me to pick a few flowers? I'm not saying that. Is it wrong? Because of course it is wrong.
Is she listening?
I told Madhuri Lananda, I said, you know, when you turn around, then I just go and pick a few flowers. I do that. I said, so I'm just waiting for you to go away for me to pick some. And then she told me, okay, I know that, but if you're going to pick some, then, you know, this is how you pick these flowers, so that you... So yeah, is it wrong for me to pick flowers, or anybody, not me, but for anybody to pick maybe few flowers while she turns around? Pick a few, yeah?
I take all of them.
Oh, okay, so I'm basically told I can take a few, but not all of them. In such a way that the garden looks beautiful, at the same time, those flowers are not missed.
Prabhupada always says that if you're an Indian, you ask someone, can I pick some flowers for the Lord? Oh, sure.
But this is also for the Lord.
But she is sitting out there.
You could ask her, you know, if she could select a few, you know, you could put in an order or something, like, or pick them.
Actually, Madhuri Nanda is very, very kind. She means she's very kind that she plants all those flowers and plants flowers here.
Madhuri Nanda, she texts me. The garland is beautiful for one day, but the garden will be beautiful for many weeks.
Wow. Jai. Madhuri Nanda ki jai.
Well,
thank you, Madhuri Alinananda. Thank you.
You know.
but I'm still going to pick a few of them now and then. Just letting you know that.
But still, I think a little bit of diplomacy, you know, if she could allow some to stay on the bush and some to be on Krishna, then it's sharing, right? I don't know. Ask her.
Anyway, thank you very much for your kind attention.
One more.
Okay, one more.
Remember, Nagaraj Prabhu mentioned in one of his classes where Srila Prabhupada translated Satchit and Anand as not as bliss, but beauty. And I have used that for beautifying the TOVP.
Ah, very sweet.
Thank you for your nice class.
Thank you, Swaha. Thank you. Thank you very much. Jai. All goes to Srila Prabhupada. All goes to all the Vaishnavas, beautiful, bright-faced Vaishnavas. And all glories to Arshi Krishna.